Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And anytime I get a guest that you know has a big thing to plug, come on the show, especially we're good friends on Facebook. So I'm so excited to welcome to the program celebrity Matt Nolan. And Matt, you're going to be on Grimm this Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern, NBC. Matt, how are you? And I know you're excited about this.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show and talking about my upcoming TV appearance. You know, it's a season premiere of the fourth season of Grimm, and my role is Detective Meacham. And, It has some good, you know, I'm in a number of scenes, but the exciting thing about the role is it might come back later in the season. And the show is very exciting. It's taking a real turn. And it was filmed in my hometown of Portland, Oregon. I moved there when I was 8 years old. So to go back there where I grew up, dreaming of being an actor, it was really an incredible experience.
Wow, that's got to be an absolute honor to get the opportunity to be filmed there, especially Hollywood guy. You know, been in a lot of different things. We talked about you brushing with greatness in so many ways, Matt. I remember that whole interview, and to get the opportunity to film in your hometown must have been awesome.
Yeah, one day we were about probably about two blocks away from a park that I played soccer at in third grade and in many grades. And then I took my very first headshot as an actor at 16 years old at that park. And now I'm a little older, and it was really wild to be back. It was just it's such an amazing city, Portland, Oregon. Really, really love it. I am from Buffalo, New York originally, so as a sports fan, I don't have a lot of luck, but I am lucky to be from those cities.
and so, it's not your hometown, but being, you know, living there in that time, I understand. So
That's right. And if your listeners, if they do happen to DVR the show, Grimm, 9 p.m. NBC Friday night, if you're on Twitter or Facebook, one thing you could do to help me out is search my name on whatever search engine you're on, Google or Bing, and search Matt Nolan, and then click on IMDb, stands for International Movie Database. And you can see my body of work and how long I've been working as an actor, and see some of the movies I've done recently, like Argo and Jersey Boys. But it helps my meter. And then on Twitter, it's at NBC Grimm. And my handle is at Matt Nolan 888. And if you want to tweet about the show and tweet, I love that Detective Meacham, Matt Nolan. who is that guy? It might help me get back on the show.
Well, we hope that for sure. And so to have this role, now tell us a bit. I know you can't give us away everything, but the filming process of working with the people in Grimm, how awesome was it? Was it really a fun experience to play that character in it?
Yeah, I think the whole cast is really talented. The lead guy, he was so professional and treated everybody, all the guest actors, like almost like a diplomat. How are you? Is everything going all right? Just checking in with you. I've had experiences the opposite. He was all just such a class act. And when I was working with him for the very first scene, I remember thinking to myself, man, this guy's on top of it. He was raising up my game. So it was really a pleasure to work with those guys.
Definitely a pleasure to work with them and to see the success of that show and to be on that show. And do you have that idea, especially coming up towards Halloween, to be that season premiere? That's pretty cool as well.
I think they probably waited just for that. Yeah, the Halloween, and they have a new show they're promoting after Grimm called Constantine. So it's going to be Friday night probably. And the quality of Grimm, the TV show has really grown and found itself, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
And it was funny, I had E.T.'s mom on my show that was on Grimm as well, and she, I think she plays a certain reoccurring guest role as well on Grimm.
That's the dream right there, recurring. That's the secret, you know. And then that series regular, that elusive series regular for me, I've been so close to pilots that haven't been picked up. It would just be nice. I've got a lot of things in the works right now as far as just even producing. And my brother... his name's Ken Nolan, he wrote Black Hawk Down, and he's got a number of projects that are in the works right now, so hopefully this next year will be the year of the Nolan.
That's so interesting when you said the year of the Nolan. I love that, and that's perfect. And where did you just come out of? I was able to catch you to do this. Where did you just come out of? Tell us what you were doing just now before I called you.
Oh, I just came out of a UFC session. I do UFC promos. It's hilarious. You know, I get really excited and talk about UFC 180. I was promoting UFC 180, actually, and it's going to be a really exciting fight, and I was doing a number of different promo spots. And voiceover is a big part of my life. I could say I can make a living at doing voiceovers. I do commercials, animation, you know, promos, obviously. And one of the strange things I do, it was a very anonymous way of making a living, but very, very good way of making a living, is I do movie stars' voices in post-production who aren't available. Let's say Robert Downey Jr. is in London, he can't do post-production. Somebody like me might come in and do his voice, and I'll do 3-4 days on the movie in post-production and get paid the same way an actor gets paid in front of the camera. So it's a really tremendous little niche.
So is that how you can live in, let's say, Portland compared to L.A. and be able to work because of the voiceover and still get a lot of work acting but have the best of both worlds and have a family life as well, would you say?
Oh, no. I live in L.A.
Oh, you live
in Portland. Yeah. I've lived in L.A. since 1990.
Oh, so you grew,
I live in
you, but you yeah. grew up and you lived in Portland at a time. You were
yeah, that's right.
You were born and raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, I went back to Portland. I went back to Portland just to film Grimm. But I've been in LA since 1990, and I live on a street that is very famous called Wonderland. There was a movie made called Wonderland: The Wonderland Murders.
Oh my!
And my friend Josh Lucas, who I've been friends with since I was 18, he invited me to the premiere, and my wife and I went there, and there was the sign, the street sign of Wonderland, and I'm like, well, this is right near our house. We're at the right premiere. We should have been invited even if we didn't know Josh.
So I find that fascinating, to say the least. Now, the question, Matt, so basically you grew up in Buffalo, and I'm sorry I forgot that story. I must be losing my mind. So then you were in Portland, then went to L.A. for your career. Am I correct? Is that
moved down when I was 19, yep, and been working ever since. So, yeah, if you check out my IMDb, it's almost like a diary of, oh, this is a good time in his life. Oh, that wasn't so good. That doesn't look like there was a period of time where he didn't work. You know?
So the last
10 years have been pretty good.
Does Portland feel like your hometown in a way? In ways? And saw press, you grew up in Buffalo. Does Portland feel that hometown type of feel when you were filming there?
Portland more so, yes. It was my formative years, elementary school, middle school, high school, and then I went to University of Oregon for a year and a half and then decided I had an agent opportunity in L.A., and I dropped out of college. I don't like the term dropout. I just chose to pursue a career instead of being involved in college theater.
Exactly. Now this voiceover thing, UFC. So are you gonna do some WWE voiceovers now as well because of doing the UFC thing?
No, I'm strictly UFC right now. you know, I had a Samsung campaign for a while, and I've done lots of different spots. AT&T, you name it. Just whatever they hire me for, I'll show up.
So how do you train yourself to be a voiceover? So there are people out there looking, say, I want to look to work. What makes a great voice? You know, there's these sports voices. They talk like this, and they have this. That's not really what they're looking for anymore, is it? What would you say?
No. Those guys are amazing. Like, hockey announcers, I think, are the best announcers out there. They talk so fast. They never miss a beat. Those play-by-play hockey announcers are incredible. In voiceovers, my opinion is, find somebody, if you want to get involved in voiceovers, you can do it from anywhere, but there's usually a local market, and there's probably a local agent. If you're in a city, there's a voiceover. You need a voiceover demo reel, and you need to find somebody who does that and go on their website and find out how they do their demo reels. My dad wanted to get involved in it. I heard some place he was going to pay a bunch of money to, and I went on the voiceover demo, and all their demos were the same. They all dropped out like 10 seconds into the ad, and they faded into another one. I just thought it was silly. You want to find a professional and reputable place, and it's not a bad idea to take some voiceover classes or coaching before you do get a reel. Once you get a reel, you can get a local agent, or you can try to get agents just from a remote place like Seattle, L.A., you know, the guy who got Mickey Mouse, the voice of Mickey Mouse, he was from Kansas City. So,
wow.
It's a deal. It's definitely something you can do from home, and then you can go to a professional place and get patched in and do your job.
What do you think training's that's needed in voiceover? Because, again, look at me and doing the intros, outros, and coming up with different things and promoting different things, introducing certain people. What makes voiceover training? Not reading too fast, not slurring your words. What do you think the end-all, be-all of being great at voiceover?
Well, when you read the specs to whatever audition that you're reading, you try to read what the client wants, and sometimes it's conflicting direction, you know, like a lot of, now they don't want anybody to sound like they're in voiceovers, like regular guy, do this, do that. And then the copy is drink orange juice. It's good for you every morning, you know? And, you're like, well, how's that supposed to be regular guy? So you can try to walk a fine line. But they're looking for guys who sound, if you watch TV and you pay attention to commercials, that's the best training for voiceover artists. Listen to the commercials, because sometimes they want it flat. They don't want to call too much attention to the voiceover because what's going on the screen is more important. Sometimes the voiceover is the narration. Sometimes the voiceover is just a tag. So it's all a different art form.
So what's your opinion about my voice, Matt? Do you think I have the talent to get a little work in voiceover, in your opinion?
I'm not just kissing your ass here. I think you're really good at what you do, and you got a great voice. I think you're a professional of the highest order. Our last interview, I was really impressed with you.
So now you're like, yeah, I'm not impressed with this guy at all. He didn't know who my hometown was. See, at late night, but at least we explained it, because it could confuse people. I would say, Matt, here's a promotion for people in Portland. When you're tweeting out hashtag Portland, because remember, I'm a Twitter aficionado. You tweet out hashtag Portland, so you get everyone in Portland to say, this is my hometown, and everyone needs to tune in Portland to Grimm, especially when it airs in Grimm. That might be your ticket. To say it is,
yes,
your hometown, it is your hometown. It's not, you're not. So, like, for example, if I'm going out and I'm looking and I did a movie in, let's say, Arkansas, I'll say, hey, Jonesboro, Arkansas is my hometown. Well, Pittsburgh was. But guess what? That's all about the promotion. So,
remember,
everyone, to tune in 9 p.m. Eastern to see Matt Nolan's debut on Grimm as Detective Meacham, but what's the greatest part about it, he filmed in his hometown. Tune in 9 p.m. Eastern, and then also follow him at Matt Nolan, 8888, am I correct? Not 999.
Magnolan 888, and it's 9 p.m. West Coast as well, 8 p.m. Central.
And then, and the other major thing is remember to follow at NBC Grimm, correct? As well.
That's correct.
And go ahead and tweet it out. So, there you go. There was my little voiceover kind of thing to promote the big event, and we can't wait. And I'm going to remember, and I'll have my kids, I'll be tuning in when my kids are asleep, when my wife is going out to dinner this Friday night. But I look forward to it, and we'll definitely have you back on again. Always reach out to me, Matt. You're always a guest on my program. Definitely a great guy. And when I saw that Grimm thing, I jumped on it as fast as possible, and I'm glad I got you on the phone. So good talking, man.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Neil. I really appreciate it. I look forward to the next one.
And I'm going to reach out, and hey, I have things to do during the day. I'd love to do some voiceovers, especially with my own professional mic. I need to look at a demo as well. So I will definitely look into Pittsburgh for that. So you educated me today, Matt. So thanks again for calling.
Heck yeah. They're doing a lot of filming there, too, in Pittsburgh. So get on it. Yeah.
See, but you got to connect me. Tell me who I can connect. Remember, I'm 6'10". I was thinking of doing the film for the whole new Will Smith deal, but I didn't have the chance to go out. But I need to have those contacts. You got to be the man, Matt, for me. Okay.
Okay. I'll email you.
All right. Good talking to you, Matt. Good.
All right, Neil.
See you later. Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook. LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I'm excited. We're getting very, very close to the heart of football season. But what I love to do is interview athletes that are truly making a difference, especially with children in the community. So I'm so excited to welcome the program two-time Super Bowl champion, Beyond the Laces ambassador and insightful player, Perry Williams. Perry, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and it's just an absolute honor to have you on the program. But for our listeners out there, tell us a little bit about your career again. Two-time Super Bowl champion from the New York Giants, a little bit of that, and then we'll get right into life after football and especially some of the things you're doing.
Okay, as you said, a two-time Super Bowl champ for the New York Football Giants. I was drafted here in New Jersey, here in the Giants organization, 1983, and I played there from 83 to 94, so total of 11 years, and as you said, a couple championships in those years, so it was a good run for me, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's a new life now. It's time for me to move over and transition to bigger and better things.
And that's what always these athletes that I do bring on the program see, the importance of life after football. You had a platform in the NFL, won Super Bowls, were on a great organization, the New York Giants, and you knew that that's just part of your life. There's life after football, Perry. And did you know this growing up, that that was an important part of it?
Yeah, I knew, as you said, nothing lasts forever. I knew transitioning from the life of professional sports back into the real world would be a new thing for me, but that was fine. And growing up in the San Diego, North Carolina, where my home is, actually where I still reside, I live there now. I'm just back and forth up in New Jersey, because I'm teaching now at a university in New Jersey, at Southern Dixon University. So I teach graduate school leadership and strategic planning classes. So, but I knew that, we have to leave away from the game because, as you know, in national football, there's an NFL logo there, but in reality, it stands for not for long. So I knew I would have to get out of this thing and got out of it in one piece, thank God. No operation, no broken bones, no pulled muscles, but now, nevertheless, a sound mind for the most part, and just trying to do some greater good for higher education now.
And see, that's great to hear about the greater good for a higher education, because I did not know that you're a professor. When you were in college, did you see education as an important thing in college, especially now looking at...
Being from the South, as it was instilled in me by my mom and my grandmother growing up that you got to get an education and can't play sports forever. And I realized that early on, and by them, hammering in my head, if you will, just to make sure that I got my education. So I realized that you could not go anywhere without education. And I took it and just worked with it and went forward. And thank God I was able to go to school myself at North Carolina State University, graduated, got an undergraduate degree. And while I was playing ball up here for the Giants, I got a master's degree during the off-season. So I was pretty much prepared by night, by the time I got ready to retire.
Well, I think that's fantastic, and that's a great role model for children, Perry, to be somebody that sees education as a value, saying, hey, I was on the football field, I excelled in the football field, not many people could say they were a Super Bowl champion, had a great career, but I knew for a fact that I had to have a career, and that I saw education as an important part of my life, and growing up learned the value of education, getting a college degree, and then from there, telling children that story. And seeing, because you see, I'm sure, young athletes all the time that their focus is just on sports and they're not thinking of after.
Yep.
How do you?
The thing is, I try to challenge them and get them to understand these student athletes of the world, because I travel all over the country. It's the real fact that you got to get that education. I don't care how great you are in the athletic world, whether it's the end in high school, college, or professionally, it comes to an end. So you have to have something else to fall back on, and the more importantly, get that education. And so I try to relate that to all these student athletes, or all kids, not just only student athletes, but just kids in general, that the strength, understand how important the education aspect is, and better yourself so you can prepare yourself for life after sports or just life in general. The things that I tell my young people when I'm in my troubles is my motto is believing is achieving. So you got to believe before you can achieve. So it's all the mind over matter concept. So I just think it's of the essence of the importance that these young people, which I call my leaders for tomorrow, will lead this country someday, that they try to get all the information they can. So I try to give as much information as I can. It's a positive aspect.
We're talking to Beyond the Laces ambassador, two-time Super Bowl champion, New York Giant, Perry Williams, and we're talking about life after football and the importance of education and telling kids and mentoring them and challenging them. I love the word challenging them. Now, what would you say the difference of teaching in the classroom and being a professional athlete? Because I myself was a professional athlete in a different league called professional wrestling, and then I went to the classroom, and I don't see as many differences as people think, especially because of there is an audience in both of those genres. Tell us about that.
Well, obviously the differentiation in being an athletic field and you participate in high school, college, or professionally, you entertain people. When you're involved with sports, I come to realization that you're entertaining people. So they pay a certain amount of money to come see you entertain them. But now in my life, I've said many times, I will entertain people for a living, but now I make a living giving back and changing lives. And that's what the thing is, really, the differentiation is. Changing lives when you get in an education where it's not like a corporate person, do the 9-to-5 or the 8-to-4 and then they go on. When you're talking with kids and you're talking with people, young people in general, about leadership and team building and all those kind of elements, I just think that it's very vital, it's important, it's something that will be everlasting for.
And what's interesting, Perry, is saying entertaining. In the classroom, you have to be entertaining. You have to challenge your kids, but you also have to be able to be somebody that's different than the norm. And I think being an entertainer in football, you definitely deal with that same stuff as well. Now, Perry,
absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I say that. I tell the students, especially when I'm in a bad level, when I'm in with these adults and these businessmen and women, I tell them, I don't want to make them sleepy so they have to take Dramamine to stay, to go to sleep on me. So I entertain them and I put a little liveliness to the class. I want to make sure that they're getting engaged into what I'm doing and astute. And understand that hey, we're here to teach you something, but at the same token, you understand that you can have some good times and some fun while you're learning something, and to carry on to your everyday endeavors and your businesses.
Absolutely. So, Perry, now tell us why you've gotten involved as an ambassador for Beyond the Laces. Tell us about that.
Well, I met the author there, Bob Solomon, several years ago through a mutual friend. They recommended that I talk to Bob and kind of engage in conversation, and it took off from there. And I knew it was something that was dear to me when I read and understood where he was coming from and what he did for the youth, for these young people of America. And so when I saw that, then I knew it was for me, and we can engage in something here that can be for the greater good, as he said so often, changing lives and more importantly, giving back. I mean, you got to give. You know, it's better to give versus, you know, being a spiritual guy myself. From, obviously, being from the South, you know, I always was raised to be, you know, better to give than receive. So I believe, again, by getting involved with Beyond the Laces, with Bob Solomon, it will be a great thing for changing lives for young people. I totally believe that, and I'm looking forward to that, and for the greater good, for mankind. It's for all people, but especially for the young kids. Just give them encouragement, believing in themselves, and anything is possible. And, you know, and so with that in mind, I knew that I was on the right page when me and I engaged in conversation over a period of time. And so here we go. We're getting ready for this big push and get ready to take it to the nation.
Well, and I think it's important to give that message. It's Beyond the Laces. And when we talk about sports, Perry, being such an important part of a lot of people's lives, where they forget about all the other important things that why we're put on this earth. And if we go out there and tell ourselves, you know, okay, it's all about, you know, scoring touchdowns and throwing touchdowns or sacking somebody or interceptions or winning games and forgetting about the human side of life, and that athletics leads to that human relationship and to help others that in need, that's what's important. That's what Beyond Laces is about, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's beyond the sports world. This is bigger than the sports world now, as you said. This is Beyond the Laces with this book coming out. This is about, you know, giving back. It's about a greater good. It's about working with kids with special needs. We're talking about kids that are hospitalized and with sickness or illness. We're talking about kids from disadvantaged and broken homes or disadvantaged situations. We're talking about for the greater good for everybody, not just for the wealthy, not for the middle class. This is for everybody. It doesn't matter what color you are to me. And I'm colorblind first and foremost. I don't believe in all this white, black, and, you know, Spanish and all this color stuff. Is all about one. It's all about togetherness. So we are pushing that wholeheartedly, and that's the main emphasis that we want to put on this, on the spin on it, is for everyone. And I've been an advocate for that for many years. I've been involved with outreach for over 25 years. Actually, I got started with outreach on my second year with the job. So that was 1984. So I've been pushing this thing for a lot of years.
To look to give back. Perry, you're looking to give back. And when you were with the Giants, you definitely never made excuses not to go visit the hospitals then. That was a key important thing for you, to get to see these kids that are sick or special needs. That was an important part of it, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It was important for me to see it. I can remember that vividly, we would have training camp at Pace University in Westchester, New York at one point, and then my last 6 years, we had training camp in Madison, New Jersey, at Forum Park out here in New Jersey, which is another campus that we have. And I would see these special needs kids come to practice, and I would always try to talk to them, or just kids in general. The kids were excited and, you know, and overjoyed to meet a lot of the guys that I had a chance to meet myself at that time. And, you know, I was happy to be able to do that because you have to be. If you have any humanity about yourself at any or any more responsibility, my moral obligation was to make sure I gave back. And I promised the man upstairs, and I always say the man upstairs, I promised God if I ever made it there, I would always give back. And that's what I'm keeping my promise to the man upstairs.
So you gave that was a huge dream for you to be an NFL player, and you promised God that I'm going to definitely pay it forward. And that's what it sounds like for sure.
Yeah, pay it forward. Exactly. I will go pay it forward. And then I passed my promise. Like any other man, you know, young man, when I first came up here, I was 21 years old when I came to New Jersey, you know, out of college from NC State, and I had my fun, but at the same token, I knew what my role was, and I knew what my mission was, and I started working towards that mission, and I got derailed a little bit. I got off track. You know, New York City will destroy you if you don't watch yourself, especially with these professional athletes. You got to realize that this is a business, basketball, baseball, football, soccer teams or whatever, these women basketball or WNBA, you got to realize that you're here for a short period of time and you do your job. And I was willing to do my job and more important, try to get back to the community. So I've always looked at New Jersey like a second home to me, even though I'm from Richland and live to make my residence in North Carolina. But New Jersey is like a second home, children. I met a lot of great people up here, and I'm still continuing to meet people, and that's wonderful. The people I did not have a chance to meet me when I was playing per se to have a conversation. Now I meet a lot of these people now since I retired, so it's a good thing.
It's definitely a good thing to have those opportunities to connect with your fans and then be that message. You talked about your faith and being able to tell other people the importance of this. We're all there are lots of people hurting all over this world, and we can feel bad and sorry for ourselves and say, man, I'm just terrible. I'm not doing great things. Why am I on this earth? And Perry, through your model as a role model to children and to adults and to everyone, they see, well, Perry Williams could be complaining. Lots of professional athletes after they retire complaining, I wish I was on that stage. Instead, you see your stage is different, and that you have joy in serving others. And hopefully that brings joy to people that think they should be hurting, but they really shouldn't be compared to a lot of people who have a lot worse, for sure.
Yeah, well, exactly. I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying there, because, I had my chance. Everybody can't be, it's old adage we say down south. Everybody can't be the chief. Somebody got to be the Indian. So I realized that, you're not going to be on top always, and it's going to be somebody that's coming along behind you. But if you can do something for the greater good of mankind and do something great for other people, then that is all worthwhile. My life, as I've said many times, I'm not going to live my life in vain. I want to make sure that when it's over, said for me, when I have to leave this place called Earth, that I try my best and I'm giving the best that I can and try to be, obedient to the calling, through my faith. So with that in mind, I feel good. I never cried one day when I retired from the game, never missed the game, period. And I knew I had something for the greater good was going to happen. And so here it is. I've been engaged in these outreach programs, and now I'm embarking on a great new adventure here with the Beyond the Laces and Bob Solomon and his group. And we're going to take this thing, we're going to take it to a new height. So.
Absolutely, Perry. And through your work with Beyond the Laces and the stuff you're doing in the community, you were also asked to be an insightful player. What does that mean to you, especially with the fraternity of players and insightful players, starting with Roger Staubach and all that? Yeah.
Yeah, well, Roger Staubach, without saying it, he's had a great off-the-field endeavor, great things to happen to him since he retired from the Dallas Cowboys many years ago. He's been very, very successful, and I applaud him for what his accomplishments and a lot of the other guys who've done some great things. Like, I come to mind Roger Staubach, real estate man, come to mind Willie Davis played for the Green Bay Packers. He's very successful in the radio business. Some of these the judge, Supreme Court Judge Justice Alan Page for the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, I look at those men and I marvel at what they did in transitioning away from the game and going to, as I said before earlier, the life after sports. And they did some great things for themselves. So when you see that should be a great model with guys like those guys that's really, took it to another level. So that's my goal and my objective, not in the same flat platform that they're in, but in the educational realm. So
exactly.
Being involved in education. In education and higher education for me, it's been a great thing for me. It was meant to be for me because I was introduced to a gentleman. This guy runs all 32 teams for the NFL. He's the vice president of Burlington University here in New Jersey. He's been here 47 years. His name is Ken Perkins. He created a model in 1985. So since 1985, with the New York Football Giants, and by 91, the whole league was using this model for guys during the offseason. They can go to school. At one of the perspective town that they was playing for, or city they were playing for. So I work hand in hand with him. So I credit a lot of my success and my mindset from a guy like this guy. It was like a mentor for me on my educational standpoint. He was the one who persuaded me to go back to school during the off season when I was playing to get a master's degree. So
that's great.
I, And I'm happy for that. And so that's where it took off for me with Fairleigh Dickinson University. So we run off to all these teams you see on TV, the NFL teams, the 32 teams. It comes through me and this guy, Ken Berkeley, at Fairleigh Dickinson University, where these guys, you go to school in the office.
Well, it's fantastic. And last thing on the Insightful Players, you join the likes of Andy Russell, Osama Young, you got people like Steve Grogan and phenomenal players out there all over the NFL that are doing great things in the community that you're definitely modeling. One interesting thing, I had Leonard Marshall on my show, and he, again, is another educator that saw the importance of education as well and through that process of from the New York Giants. So Leonard's a fantastic guy as well.
Yeah, Leonard played 10 years with me. He and I came up here in 1983 to the organization. We both got drafted here. And he played 10 consecutive years with me, and then he left and went to another team. But, I had the good pleasure and privilege to play with Lenny. We call him Lenny for many years. And I'm happy that he's doing some good things for himself.
All right, so Perry, where's the best place to find you? Is it best to go to beyondthelaces.com for information, or is there other places as well?
Yeah, well, beyondthelaser.com is an ideal place to go to. If you want to find out more about what we're doing there with beyondthelaser.com with Bob Solomon, the author, and Perry Williams, the ambassador, then they can go there and find out a lot of information and be in tune and be ready, because we'll hit the cities in the coming months, and we'll do some great things. So we're looking forward to meeting a lot of people.
And then also to remember, beyondthelaces.com, we'll probably have the Beyond the Laces series. Soon we're going to be announcing more Beyond the Laces ambassadors. And then also the Insightful Player series will be coming soon. So remember to go to insightfulplayer.com to learn great information on Chrissy Carew and all the great things she's doing with NFL players, giving back to the community and helping. And they also do school assemblies, insightfulplayer.com. Well, Perry, awesome having you on the show. We'll definitely have you back to update us specifically what's going on with Beyond the Laces and some of your other ventures. And great to have another educator friend. I love to see professional athletes or teachers.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and teacher to teacher, for sure. So best of luck, Perry, and thanks again for calling.
But thank you. Thank you for the interview.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And this guy is going to try to break the record for number of segments with me, non-education, meaning as an educator, but as a celebrity. So I want to welcome the program Super Bowl champion, just dynamite sports, ethic training, all the different places, former Pitt superstar, Super Bowl champion, Darnell Dinkins. Darnell, how are you?
Hey, Neil, how's it going, man? I'm doing so good, man. I'm loving this sunny Pittsburgh day. It's like we're in Florida today.
Yeah, I know. And then it's going to be cloudy, partly cloudy tomorrow. You know that's how it is in Allegheny County. But
exactly.
But what we've been talking about in the college recruiting process is, I guess, not to really pick the right school and then to choose the school. Well, I thought today's topic is, again, I never tell you these things, Darnell, but you know this book backwards and forwards. And again, this book for our listeners out there to purchase, you can go to DinkinsEthicTraining.com and purchase it. It's How to Prepare for College Athletics and Recruiting Process, the Student Athlete and College Recruiting, and it's written by and compiled by Rick Wire, and Darnell is involved in this process of promoting the book for sure and going out and doing talks all over the country. So we always are talking about Pittsburgh, because us Pittsburghers, we kind of do that, but we're talking internationally. And I wonder when Darnell's going to go across the pond to our good friends over in London to do a talk on athletics as well, especially, and you never know if that'll ever happen, but I'm sure it'd be very, very interesting. But the process, the thing I thought about today, is now you are honed in on understanding what you're looking for. But how do you get these college recruits to look at you? We talked about the height, weight, specific thing. But how are you prepared so that when those recruiters come to your games, come to maybe watch you in practice and stuff, that you're prepared? Because that's another big part of it as well. Because you can completely lay an egg if you had recruiters come to your game and you had a so-so game and lose your opportunity to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, there's two different phases that people can do when they're trying to get noticed by schools. You know, I was talking, you know, last night at McKeesport High School with Charlie Kiss, the AD, did a great job of getting the parents out, getting the coaches out. But you could have a kid like Khalik Hudson, a running back at, you know, McKeesport, who is doing having a phenomenal year. But how do I know that I'm getting seen by these colleges? How do I know that Ohio State or West Virginia or Tennessee even knows that I exist? So a couple of things that a parent can do, and if parents are listening right now, this, my name is Darnell Dinkins. I'm former 9-year NFL vet, Super Bowl champ. And what I do with my company, Down to My Sports, we speak all over the country about the recruiting process. And what parents can do is start building their kids' resume themselves. We have all types of, you know, technology. We got iPhones, iPads. They'll probably be making iHats, iGlasses, iUnderwear pretty soon, Neil. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
Take that information and that technology. Start recording your kid and everything, single thing that they do, because their athletic resume, everything you record is like their athletic resume. So you want to put forth the time, whether they're training, whether they're in a game. And this way, if you do have a game where recruiters come out, most of the time, if recruiters are coming out, coaches, everybody knows it's a big game. And sometimes the pressure from that can make you not play like yourself. So you can start making sure that you do these first steps is make sure you take unofficial visits. Now, parents say, well, I don't know, what should we do? You should choose every level of play from Division I, Division I AA schools, Division II, Division III. In our book, we got every scholarship, how many scholarships those particular sports have. So we're just talking on football. D1 has 85 scholarships for college for football players. Division II have 36, and 1AA have 63 scholarships. So you can look online and see how many seniors these schools have to say, okay, this is how many possible scholarships they'll have going into next year. So with that being said, I want to go and visit these schools and see if that fits me. Now, I tell kids all the time when I was recruiting at Rutgers and I coached at Rutgers, Titans and special teams, Neil, I would tell parents this all the time. I would say, understand, college is not a one-day, a one-year commitment. It's a 4 to 5 year commitment of the rest of your life. So you want to make sure that this school has everything that you want, not just athletically, but more important, academically first, then socially. And now when I'm at these schools, I can make sure that even if things don't pan out with the football team or the basketball team or the volleyball team or the soccer team that I'm on, at least I can make sure that academically I'm strong and socially I'm good. So you parents need to make sure that they're taking part and taking unofficial visits. The best thing about unofficial visits, if you call a coach up, any event going on campus, you get 3 complimentary tickets for that particular event. Once again, go over way more questions in page 82 of our student athlete and college recruiting handbook that people can purchase at www.dinkinsethictraining.com. And what we're going to be able to do when we go to these schools, ask particular questions. Ask a player on the team, has the coaching staff delivered on everything they said they would? Ask a particular player on the team, hey, do you feel like you fit in at the university? And that's the first phase in making sure you pick the right level of play for you, picking the right school for you, and making sure that when these schools come around to marketing or look to recruit kids, they'll say, you know what? I remember Josh Jenkins, he came to our school on an unofficial visit. Now just being a name on this piece of paper, I actually know this kid. I met him. I met his mom and his dad. They're really cool. He's a very, you know, laid-back kid, and I think he'll fit our team. And so if it comes down to Josh Jenkins and another kid who had not been seen, the same type of athlete, that coach will remember that unofficial visit that parent took, and it will help them be able to pick the right level or possibly get a scholarship.
So that's interesting when you talked about, as we talked about last week on the program, we talked about, you know, going for those unofficial visits, but the way we kind of talk to the coaches, the way we interact with the coaches, so when they come to visit us to watch us play, we're able to put on a great show, but also a professional show, so that you play really good in your game. You go meet the coach afterwards, say hello and introduce yourself, look them in the eye, shake their hand, show that you're not blowing them off for what's after the game. Then they're going to more and more likely say, this seems like a professional person that I want in my college. I want somebody who's going to be professional, act professionally, and be able to be the college athlete that I want to represent my university.
Exactly, Neil. The best thing about taking unofficial visits is the fact that when I take an unofficial visit, if I do get to a point where I'm a top athlete and I only get to, and I finally get to take an official visit, which means now the school really wants you to come there, want to offer you a scholarship, now I can kind of weed out some of those schools because I only get 5 official visits that last 48 hours in length. So if I can go to some of these schools prior to, see exactly what the school has or may not have, then I can make sure I make the sound decision. You know, I had a family take a – I was recruiting a kid, and I ended up leaving. They picked the school based for me, and the kid was from Florida. Piscataway, New Jersey is way different from Orlando, Florida. They came, I left. The mother was in tears because, you know, they had came there solely because of, you know, me. So I understand, you know, college coaches change and they move around all the time. So you need to make sure the school fits you. Then on the next side of it, it's the marketing aspect of it. There's 3 different ways of marketing. You can go by your home, but go home, have a good game. Go home, go by the bed, kneel and pray, and hope that, okay, I know I'm going to get a letter from Clemson. I know I'm going to get a letter from Louisville or something today, right?
Yeah.
That may not be the case. Because you scored a rush for 100 yards, you might have joined a whole circuit of 2,000 kids that rushed for 100 yards that day. So that does not mean the school is going to pan you out. The second phase, like I said, the parent can market their student-athlete themselves. They can take video. They can clip them together. They can send them out to schools and wait for a response. Now, parents say, well, how do I know if I can't contact schools? A parent can contact the school whenever they desire to. The school just cannot contact the parent back until their senior year. They cannot contact you before your senior year via the phone, email. Now, they can. That's why we talked about social media. They can direct message you on Facebook and or Twitter. So you want to make sure that your child's Facebook or Twitter is up to par. So once again, all this information you can find on our website, dinkinsathletictraining.com. And then the last thing is you can get help from a professional. Send out your information to different components, different people. With us, there's a company that I will refer. It's NCSA. They help you get exposure and help you put your stuff out there. They have a database, a live database that coaches actively use of over 42,000 coaches for Division I, Division II, NAIA, and Division III. And all it does is help kids get exposure. So those are the things. I will take unofficial visits, and then I would definitely start making sure I either record my child and send the stuff out or get help from a professional to make sure that these schools, the Boston Colleges, the North Carolina States, the Wake Forests, the Dukes, the Virginias, the Pitts, Florida States, make sure that they understand your kid and know your kid. Because the more relationship you build for the next 4 years of your kid's high school career, starting ninth grade year, is going to help them have smooth sailing come their senior year.
Because a lot of times you can't count on your coach being the one that's going to get those films out to people.
He should not.
And he should, but again, they're not getting the recruits always looking at his school. So, for example, like if there's a basketball team that, you know, constantly gets recruits, you got to get like an organization, like you said, that will help distribute your film out there, get it out there, your perspectives, your resume, so that those schools find you. Unless you're a top blue chipper in the area, you're not going to be discovered unless you go out and market yourself, right?
Absolutely. You have to market yourself. If any parent, whether you're in London, which, Neil, I love how you put out there that, like, without speak over in London, absolutely. As long as the school was paying for me and my wife to take our flight over there, we would definitely go to
London.
No,
I have to go with you. My wife has to, and our family too. So that's the only way I can have it. I'm just kidding, Darnell. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, we would definitely, any parent listening out there, you should definitely not leave it in the coach's hands. You want to make sure you're an active part. You want to talk with the counselors first. Make sure your child is in line academically. After that, you then want to start making sure you're recording what your son or your daughter is doing when they play and or train. And this way, all this is doing is building a rapport for your child, building a resume so that when the school is ready to pull the trigger on your son or your daughter, they got everything in line as far as what they can and cannot do. You want to be able to put your child's best foot forward. And like I say, whether you get help from a professional, I would refer a company, NCSA. Once again, we can be contacted directly at Twitter on Darnell_Dinkins. You can, you know, follow us, or Ethic_Training. And then you can, you know, look on our Facebook page at Dinkins, Ethic Training, or anybody out there can email us as well. You can see all the information on our website at DinkinsEthicTraining.com. But this is the information that we give the parents, schools all over, and more importantly, what is a parent's game plan for the recruiting process? Just like you go into a basketball game, a soccer game, a softball game with a game plan on how to win, you need a game plan on how the next 4 years of your life. If you're a junior right now and you're sitting there and you have no letters from anybody, you may want to start hitting the panic button. What is my game plan for getting into college?
And by going to DinkinsEthicTraining.com right now, you can purchase the book. And what's great is there are a lot of Q&A questions as well. There are certain questions that you want to contact Darnell Dinkins at Darnell_Dinkins on Twitter. You could ask questions right now or, again, at that Ethic Training's Twitter as well. You could check all those different things out by just Googling it. That you're going to be able to... We'll be able to answer those questions for you, but the book, absolutely written by Rick Wire, will answer those questions as well. And then if you want Darnell to come speak at your high school or anywhere to talk about college athletics and stuff, please contact him by going to the website DinkinsEthicTraining.com, correct?
Absolutely, Neil. They can contact us there. They can schedule, you know, a seminar if any athletic directors or any parents may refer to an athletic director. We'll come out, put up a free seminar. We'll talk. We even have the staff development for the athletic directors, the coaches, and the counselors. Understand, I've been in many schools right here in Pittsburgh area where the counselors don't understand the changes in the NCAA requirements, which are vital. What is the benefit of kids to go through 4 years of high school and end up at their senior year and not be eligible to play or to move on because of a quirk academically that was just missed or not even noticed? So those are the things that we've been helping schools all over. I can run off schools right now that you'd be like, man, that school needed help. So it's vital that people contact us. If they want to purchase a book, they can go to www.thinkingethictraining.com. They need to look out for our upcoming camp that myself and my wife are holding with Neil. You'll be running the SAT component. We're getting big numbers already. People, it's a $25 camp. It's be right down at Pittsburgh Indoor Sports Arena. It's an SAT football camp from 6 to 7 p.m. We'll be doing SAT prep tutoring. And that's from 7 to 9, we'll be doing all types of football drills. And we had guys, big-time athletes like Ben DiNucci, DeAndre Gaston, Grant Foster, Ronnie Jones, and so many top-notch, you know, Jordan Whitehead, so many top-notch players around the Pittsburgh area have come out, and we're looking for a second annual winter camp, an SAT camp to be just as big as last year. So everybody's looking for information on that. Once again, www.thinkingsethictraining.com. They can go on there, register right now, and they'll be ready to go. And Neil, when you come out there and you're going over the tutor stuff, you'll be giving them quality and sound information.
Exactly. And what I'm going to be giving them, and this is, again, we haven't talked about this because of the fact of coming for tutoring, we're going to go over some of the basic things of skill sets that you need to practice right now to even be able to sniff the SAT or the ACT.
Exactly.
Things that are basics that aren't taught in your schools right now. That's the scary part about it, Darnell. They're not being taught in their schools. So you going to this event, you're going to find those things out.
Exactly. And one thing I talk about when I speak at schools, Neil, what parents and what student-athletes don't understand, who would go into a football game without having that one day of practice? Who would go into a basketball game or a volleyball match without having one day of practice? It's the same thing with this SAT. This score and this test, you know, signifies so much what happens into your college process. Why would you go into it without any type of prep work?
Exactly.
So it's valuable that everybody out there listening, you go to www.thinkingsethictraining. You register right now. Not only will you learn football skills, but you will learn skills. If you're an average athlete and you're average along with another guy, but you have an outstanding SAT score along with a GPA, that may get you the scholarship or some type of partial scholarship you was looking for over another kid. And as a college recruiter and coach at Rutgers, I've seen it happen firsthand where we picked another kid because of his SAT score was higher than another's.
Oh, wow.
So please understand, we are 150% behind this, and it's only going to make any student-athlete, any parent out there better in the area of SAT once they're done with us.
Okay, so Darnell, we're running out of time. We'll talk next week, and I have to think and look at this great book and say, what do I want to talk about next? But very interesting information. People can go back and by listening to it by going – following him on Twitter and seeing it being tweeted out all the time, airing all over the radio networks. So good talking to you, Darnell, and we'll talk soon, man.
I'm good. Always a pleasure, Neil.
All right, take care, man. Okay, you're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook. LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And that takes a long time to have all those posts, but I try to do it on a daily basis. Post all those social media sites. But talking about a series that I just so much enjoy, it's the Miami Book Fair series. We're on week three, and I guess I'll have to do my own calendar in my head to November 16th, the 23rd, the Miami Book Fair, and again, 21st and 23rd, the Street Fair, and I will be broadcasting live November 22nd and 23rd for the fourth straight year. 1 year I was in Miami. The other three have been in studio, so I'm so excited. Again, you got to check it out, November 21st to 23rd, and go to miamibookfair.com. And I have someone for two segments, and I'm really excited to welcome the program, award-winning author Janet Burraway, author of Losing Tim. Janet, thanks for calling, and thanks for being
pleasure.
On the show. I'm excited to talk to you because, again, there are a lot of themes in Losing Tim for sure, with PTSD and different situations that we could have topics for talk about forever, but I'm sure you
could.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'm sure you're very, very honored to be asked to come to the Miami Book Fair, aren't you?
I am.
Is this the first time, Janet, you've been there?
It is the first time in Miami, yes. I live with this book. I looked into the Los Angeles Times Book Fair and the Tampa Bay, but this is the first time in Miami.
Well, I tell you, it definitely has the very interesting themes, but it's got to be tough to write about this.
Right.
We talked about this off air, and it's got to be the hardest one to talk about because, speaking of, I just lost my father-in-law, and to just even look at losing a loved one and then have to speak about it over and over and over again. But it seems like for you, it's peace. It keeps you at peace at times, right, to talk about this.
I'm sorry.
It keeps you at peace, a sense of peace or a sense of understanding of being able to share this with others.
Yes, there have been various periods about both speaking and writing about him. At first, I talked incessantly, obsessively, and wrote obsessively. And I think that for me, as for many authors, writing is the way we make sense of the chaos of the world. And certainly, this was the most chaotic emotional time that I went through. So the writing was enormously helpful to me.
Definitely. And I think that just helps you with the process for sure. So tell me a bit about how first of all, when you started writing the book, how you kind of put this all together once you decided. Tell us about that.
Well, it is, of course, about the suicide of my son, Tim, who went to Iraq in 2003 with enormous enthusiasm, believing that the war was necessary and that we would find WMDs and so forth, and came back in 2004 bitterly disillusioned. And 2 months later, after he returned to his family, he took his own life. And when I learned about it, I think it was within a week, I started writing first an angry letter to the NRA and then journal entries about what I was feeling, what I was going through every day. And then eventually I realized that the pattern of my days was that I would grieve and then have memories of Tim, grief memory, and that I was not catching those memories in my journals. So I started deliberately doing that. Everything I could think of about his life, flashing it down on paper. I was also reading obsessively about loss, about PTSD, about suicide, about depression. And those books were enormously helpful to me. So eventually I thought, there is in this process a book that might be helpful to other people.
Oh, I absolutely believe that, Janet. To think about what you're talking about, there definitely is a need. When we just talk about PTSD alone and how many people are suffering from this. And bringing up the Iraq War, especially from 2003 on, and how, again, it definitely parallels in so many ways Vietnam and how long it took us to overcome the effects of Vietnam. Iraq's even worse in certain aspects because in a lot of ways we don't know what we were fighting for, and we were told a lie in certain aspects. And I think that's so there's a lot to share in this for sure in this process. So take me back in a way when Tim was excited about going to Iraq and believing that he's going to fight this war to help, rid them of the WMDs and stuff, and his excitement going in, because a lot of people who first sign up for the military have this unbelievable, passion that this is, I'm serving my country. Kind of take us back to that. Yeah.
Well, Tim did have that passion, and it appeared in him at a very early age. As a little boy, he never got over his love of the weaponry of war and the history of war and the hierarchy of the army. All of that stuff was fascinating to him. And he went into ROTC in college as a sort of matter of course. That's the way he was headed. And then he did 3 years in ROTC, and then 4 in the Army, and then 8 in the Reserve. And in the Reserve, he volunteered for everything in sight. He went to the Republic of Congo and Angola and Cameroon and Bosnia-Herzegovina. And his last job in the Army was running a demining operation in Namibia in South Africa, just north of South Africa. And that job that he was doing was then, at the end of his year there, privatized. And none of us had any idea.